Get started in just a minute. So we're here on Daf Hey Amid Beis. Okay, a few things that I wanted to add to what we already covered. And I apologize that the photocopy machine is not behaving properly. So we'll try to do the best we can with some Torah Shebal Peh.
What is this?
I did a while ago, but that's not, we're not ready for that.
Not yet.
Hopefully we'll get to Mitzvah Shem. So on the Gemara, on Daf Hey Amid Beis, we have here a sugya called Holon V'Holahu. And let me just review what we already did, so that I can introduce some chidushim here. Rashi interprets the following, that there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Loretz. In the case of Eretz Yisrael, we have what's called Batei Arei Choma, that means we have cities that are walled, and because of the sanctity of those cities, a Mitzora is sent out of the city. That only applies in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz Loretz, for example, in Bavel, there's no such din, which means that a Mitzorah can stay at home. In Chutz Loretz, he doesn't have to be alienated and pushed away from society. That's how Rashi interprets the sugya of Holon V'Holahu. And if you just want to review the Rashi, just to refresh your memories, you'll see it's three lines down from the top of the page. So Tosus objects, Dibra Maskel Holon V'Holahu, and he says, wait a minute, Rabbi Yochanan is talking at the time when Yovel was no longer in force. And the law of Batei Arei Choma, the Kedushas Arei Choma, to send a Mitzora out of the Machne, only applies as long as Yovel applies. But if there's no Yovel, then there's no Shiluach Min HaMachne. So why would Rabbi Yochanan say that somebody who suffers from the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael is by definition suffering from what we call Yisurim Shal Kapara, meaning for the sins? It cannot be Yisurim Shal Ava, because the fact that he sent out, you know, this public alienation, and we seclude him and segregate him and send him outside. But Tosa says, wait a minute, that whole halacha that we send him outside doesn't apply at the time of Rabbi Yochanan, because there is no Yovel. So far so good. That's the kasha of Tosus against Rashi. So I found in the Sefer an article to defend Rashi. And again, I would have photocopied a few. I have one copy before the machine went on me. So Rabosa, you could look over there. And if not, I have the Rambams. You could look in the Rambams. And this is from Rav Reichman's Sefer called Rishima Shiurim, based on the Shiurim of Rav Soloveitchik. And in order to explain Rashi, he says the following. This is an unbelievable chiddush, which you'll see on page Samach Zayin, all the way at the bottom, the last two lines. Okay? He says that Rashi holds that even though Kedushas Batei Arei Choma depend upon Yovel, and therefore in our time we don't have Yovel, we don't have Kedushas Batei Arei Choma, he says nevertheless, the law of Shiluach Mitzora still applies even though we don't have Kedushas Arei Choma. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It still applies.
Now, how could that be? There's halacha that a tamei has to get out of a place that's kadosh, and we exclude, we exile this tamei, this mitzora from a place that has kedusha, namely from Arei Choma. Why should that apply, even though there's no kedushas Arei Choma? And he uses a brisker terminology here. We'll try to see if we can understand what he means. He says, "Eladu din bifnei atzmo." It's a law unto itself. L'shaleach mitzora, to send out a mitzora, mi'cheftza shel arechoma, from that which is defined as a cheftza, an object.
Cheftza versus
gavra.
Okay. Yeah.
No, not gavra. No. David. In this case, he doesn't mean cheftza versus gavra. He means cheftza versus kedusha, meaning there's something that has a sanctity al pi din. You know, halachically, the halacha recognizes its kedusha, and then there's a cheftza. Cheftza means the mitzvah. So I would even cross out the word cheftza for those who are not oriented in this language and use the word mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of physical reality of Arei Choma, and a city that's walled presumably in Eretz Yisrael only, okay, we'll get back to that later, has a certain status to it, a legal status, which requires sending the Metzorah out of the Arei Choma, even if the Arei Choma are not sanctified. Just by very virtue of the fact that there's a Heftah Shel Arei Choma. As soon as you define it as a walled city, the law of Shiluach Metzorah kicks in and you have to send the Metzorah out.
So it is a walled city that's under the Arei Choma.
Correct, and those cities that are walled in Eretz Yisrael, even though they were past Yovel, and therefore the Kedushas Bati Arei Choma is completely invalid, there's no law to send out the Tmeim, but yet, by virtue of the fact that it's a Heftah of Arei Choma, again, I emphasize this language, that itself engenders this halach of Shiluach, we have to send them out.
And that's also from Tari Yeshua, yeah. Or not?
I don't know. We'll see about that. We're jumping a little bit ahead of ourselves. In any event, how does Rav Soloveitchik come up with this wild idea? Again, it would fit nicely into Rashi, but you've got to find some source for it. So here we're going to open up to the Rambam. There are two Rambams that we have to compare and contrast in order to generate this Chiddush. You know, the Rambam in Sefer Tara has what's called Hilchas Tumas Tzaras. The laws of Tumas Tzaras. So we're going to open up, in this case, to Hilchas Tzaras, Perek Yud. Okay? So if anybody ever wants to learn the Goyim, so you have to really learn all of the Rambams in Hilchas Tumas Tzaras. Let's see how many chapters there are. Oh my goodness, it keeps going and going. Alright, it's all told 16 chapters in the Rambam, just on Hilchas Tumas Tzaras. Okay, fine. So we're going to look now in Perek Yud Halacha Zayin. Let's see what we can find there. Din HaMitzora Sheyelo Moshav Levado Chutz Le'ir. The Mitzora should have a place to live outside the city. Shenema Michutz LaMachna Moshava V'dover Zeh. And this halacha, ba'ayoros hamukafos choma bi'eretz Yisrael bilvad. So please notice that the Rambam here in Tumas Tzaras codifies this halacha that the Mitzorah has to live chutz l'machna in the case of Arei Choma, and the Rambam goes out of his way to emphasize that this only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Notice, he doesn't mention any sort of limitation rule. Is this limited to Yovel? Is it even after Yovel? He just says this halacha that there has to be michutz l'machna moshavo, a place for the Mitzorah outside the walls of the city.
Can I just ask, it sounds very limited because I don't know how many cities there were, but let's say a minute amount of cities were walled from time to time.
Right.
And if you lived in, like, I don't know, a moshav somewhere, and you had Tzaras, you wouldn't necessarily be...
Right. So would Rabbi Yochanan switch the law around if you weren't living in a city that's walled?
How do we know that it's only no hate when you have yoga? It's not the right, so is it?
Yeah, well, the halacha of Shiluach Tmeim Min HaMachta, which we're going to see now in Hilchas Bias Migdash in a different halacha, is a Dorais halacha. This is not some sort of rabbinic invention.
How do we know that it's Yovel limited?
I'll tell you, that has to do with a complicated sugya. It's not in the Bavli, actually, it's in the Yushalmi. And it touches on Shvius, and also, were you here when we discussed that Shvius depends upon Yovel? There are certain aspects of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, that depend upon Yovel. And once the Yovel is no longer Noeg, when the Jews are in exile, at that point the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, Lagavi, certain dinim is Paka. One of those dinim is Arei Choma. So for example, if I sell you a piece of property in a walled city, the law is that I have rights to redeem that property up to 12 months of the sale. That halach will only apply when the city is sanctified and Yovel is Noeg.
That's specifically in the Torah.
Yes. That's all Dorais. There's nothing here that's the Rabban. Nothing that we're going to discuss today is the Rabban.
But as far as being sent out because, not knowing during Yovel, where does that come from?
So again, the Yerushalmi has various derivations, Hekeshim. That's not for us now. But again, what I want to focus, again, we're not learning the Goyim now, we're not learning Bati Arei Choma, we're not learning Erechin. But I want you to focus your attention on the following question. What would be the significance, what would be the meaning of sending the Metzorah out of a walled city when the walled city has no sanctity whatsoever? That's what we want to focus on. Meaning, if Rashi is telling us that this halach of Shiluach Metzorah applies even after the Yovel, which means even after Kedushas Batei Arichoma is completely invalid, send out the Tomei, what meaning does it have? So first of all, no, we're talking about a Doraisa. Shalotishkach Torah would be a Drabbanan. As I said, we're talking on a Doraisa level. I mean, so Rabbi will say, you know, give me 5 minutes. I'll tell you why. Because I don't want to spend the whole shiur on this. It's a very nice shtickle Torah, and I think you'll enjoy the chiddush here. But let's make believe we know nothing. As my Rebbe always told me, don't ask any questions if you know nothing. So let's just make believe for our purposes we never learned Negayim. We're not a Baki in Hilchas Negayim. And we don't know anything about Batei Arichoma. Let's just see one idea that I want to get out of this, which I think is absolutely chiddush, is a big, fascinating idea. I want to turn to the Rambam now in Hilchos Bias Migdash. Again, if I had a photocopy machine, you'd have this all in front of you. It's Perek Gimel Halacha Beis. Okay then? So you can take a look at the Rambam and pass it around if you like. Perek Gimel Halacha Beis. The Rambam says the following. He talks about Mitzvah Saseh Lishloach kol hatmeim min hamigdash. There's a positive command. It's not just an isur that you're not allowed to leave the tmeim in the base hamigdash, but there's also, it's not just a los asay, it's also an essay to send the tmei, all the tmeim, outside of the base hamigdash. And the Torah says, v'yishalchu min hamachne, right? Kol tzorua v'kol zav v'kol tmei l'nefesh. So it doesn't only apply to Tumas Mess. It applies to many different, what we call, Avos Hatuma. And the Torah says, Yishalchu min ha-machne. Zeh ha-machne, what is that machne? So the Rambam says that that machne divides up into three different levels. There's machne Shechina, there's the Azara, there's Ezris Yisrael. And the Rambam says, Shomea ani, Sham mitzora v'azav u'tomi mes, they all have to be sent outside of the machne. And I would think that in that case, it only applies to these machnos, you know, that are surrounding the Beis HaMikdash where the Shechina is. Talmud Lomer b'mitzora, but in the case of mitzora, the pasuk says, Badad Yeshev Michutz LaMachne Moshava. And that din of Badad Yeshev Michutz LaMachne extends beyond Yerushalayim. He says, "Lefichach, mishalchenes amitzora chutz l'sholosh machnos shehu chutz l'Yerushalayim." It's even further away from Yerushalayim. It's not just the makom hashchina, and that's the Rambam in Hilchos Bias Mikdash. So the Rav says the following: why does the Rambam not mention a word about Batei Arichoma? The Rambam here is talking about the mitzvah of Shiluach Tmeim in a Machne, and he speaks about Yerushalayim and the three Machnos. He doesn't breathe a word about Mitzora. I'll read to you his language. He says, Tzorach Iyun Amai Hishmit HaRambam Kan Din Shiluach Mitzora Me'ayoros HaMukofos Choma. The Rambam has it in Hilchos Tumas Tzaras, and he leaves it out in the dinim of Bias Migdash, in the Kedushas Migdash in Yerushalayim. He says the following: the answer lies in a Rambam, not in Mishneh Torah, but in Sefer HaMitzvos. The Rambam writes the following. This is the Minyan HaMitzvos of the Rambam, and he says the following: Sheyehei HaMitzora Mifursam, which means what? Public, right? You got to go public here in this case. Bekriyas begadav, he's got to rip his garments. Uprias rosho, va'atia al sofam. These are various dinim that apply to a mitzora, all of which have a kiyum of pirsum ha-mitzora. Pirsum ha-mitzora. There's a halacha of pirsum, of publicizing the mitzora. It comes out now that there are two different dinim and two different reasons why the mitzora is sent out of the machna. He says the first din of shiluach ha-mitzora is midin shiluach tmeim. That applies because of Tumas Mitzorah. And therefore we send him out of the three Machnos and out of Yerushalayim. Then there's another din of Shiluach min HaMachne, which is a kiyum of Pirsum. He says to publicize that he's a Mitzorah. There are so many different dinim that apply to the way the Mitzorah dresses, the way he looks, and also to where he lives. He's sent out min HaMachne to be Mekayim, this din of publicizing the fact that he's a Mitzorah. And it's derived from a pasuk in Parshas Mitzorah. The Torah says, "Tomei, Tomei Yikra." We've got to publicize, call out, declare that he's a Tomei. So the Rav says that there's a basic nafkamina between these two dinim. He wants to say the following: the halach of shiluach tmeim in a machna, where Mitzorah is one of the various categories of tmeim, and that applies to Beis Hamikdash and Yerushalayim. And the Torah gave a separate lav. If you don't send him out, as the Rambam says, HaTomei HaMeshulach miHarabayis im Nichnas, if he goes back into the Harabayis, Over Belosa Sefaloka, says the Rav, that all applies to all the Tmeim in Yerushalayim, but only if there's Kedusha Samakom, if the place is sanctified. And therefore, if the place is sanctified, the Tumas HaTmeim is antithetical to that sanctity. However, he says that this other din, that there's a mitzvah of pirsum, tomei tomei yikra, that applies to a mitzorah, and specifically to a mitzorah, and it doesn't apply to all tmeim necessarily. He says that halacha, you could be mekayim in batei arichoma, and even if they don't have kedushas batei arichoma. He says the following: Behilchas bias migdash, why does the Rambam omit the din of shiluach mitzorah? He says, midin tum also chal din shiluach mitzorah mishalken also michutz legimel machnos. The Rambam is talking about the halach of shiluach atmeim. It's a kiyum of machna, of kedushas hamachna. However, the halach which the Rambam codifies in Hilchas Tumas Negoim, and Hilchas Tumas Tzaras, of Shiluach HaMitzorah, Me'ayoros HaMukofos Choma, Ein Din Zechal Midin Shiluach Tmeya Mimachna Kadosh, it's not because of the mitzvah of observing and, shall we say, maintaining the sanctity of the makom of the machne, El Dinu Mikiyum Mitzvah HaMitzorah, Lefar Seim Es Tumaso. In order to publicize his tumah, in other words, there's a fundamental difference between tumas tzaras and bias migdash. The Rambam codifies the mitzvah of tomei tomei yikra and tumas tzaras. That's a specific kiyum of tumas tzaras, and it doesn't touch on kedushas Yerushalayim. Whereas the Rambam in Hilchas Bias Migdash is focused on Kedushas Yerushalayim and Kedushas Machnos. Where does the Rambam choose to codify the halach of Shiluach HaMitzorah min HaMachneh? Not in Hilchas Bias Migdash. It's not a halacha in Kedushas HaMakom, and therefore it doesn't belong in Yerushalayim, but rather it belongs in Hilchas Tumas Tzaras. And therefore, the Rambam in Hilchas Tumas Tzaras writes the following. This is Perek Yud Halacha Ches. HaMitzorah Eino Poras V'Eino Foremes V'Lo Otal Sfasam El Yosheves Chutz L'Ir U'Modi Al Acherim Shu Tamei or Shehi Tmeya, if it's a female. Why does the Rambam write that even though there's no Priya, there's no Prima Mikomakom, nevertheless the Tmeya has to sit Chutz L'Ir? The answer is, the Ram wants to tell us that don't think that since there's no chiyuv of priyo prima and atiya safam, which is a kiyuv mitzvah of tami tami yikra, therefore the entire kiyuv of pirsum is completely gone and void. No, it's not. Kamashma, the Ram wants to tell us that although certain methods of pirsum are alleviated, are removed, but nevertheless the halach of yeshiva chutz le'ir is nevertheless in force, tamei tamei yikra, even without the chiyuv of priyum prima. Is Mela, let's go back to our Rashi. Rashi says that there's a din of shiluach mitzorah in batei arichoma, even bizman Rabbi Yochanan. That means even after what? The yovel is no longer in force. So he says, chal din zeh, this din of shiluach mitzorah is a result of pirsum ha-mitzorah. There's a kiyum of pirsum ha-mitzorah, There are two dimensions to Batei Arichoma. One is called Kedushas Batei Arichoma, which engenders the halacha of Tmeim, that we have to send out the Tmeim. But then there's a specific halacha with regard to the Mitzora, and that halacha is generated not by Kedushas Batei Arichoma, but rather by a Cheftza Shel Batei Arichoma. He says the following: V'chal din shiluach hamitzorah mibati arichom bisman hazeh, afal pisha ein hayovel noheg, v'afal pisha batla kedushas batei arichoma. Masha'en kein din shiluach hamitzorah michutz l'gimel machnos, zechal midin shiluach hatmeim v'utoli b'kedushas batei arichoma, v'kemen shepaka hayovel eino noheg bisman hazeh. And he concludes his presentation by quoting a Rambam again in Hilchas Tumas Tzaras. The Rambam writes, we saw this Rambam earlier, V'dover zeh bayoras ha-mukafas choma bi-eretz Yisrael bulvad. Why did the Rambam feel compelled to add those words, bi-eretz Yisrael bulvad? My kamashma pshita. We know from all the Rambams up till now that Kedushas Batei Arichoma is dependent upon Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't apply to Chutz Laretz. So if you wall the city of Rome, or so, you know, it doesn't have Kedushas Batei Arichoma. Elo lefi ma shebi'arnu shemitzvah shiluach mitzorah toli b'cheftza shel Arichoma. Is salka daitech amina, I might think that afilu b'chutzar it's ika cheftza shel Arichoma. There is a mitzius, there is a reality of a walled city. V'chala mitzvah shiluach mitzorah. And there is now a mitzvah shiluach mitzorah af mi batei choma shebechutz laretz kamashmal in a Rambam to rak v'eretz Yisrael chal din shiluach meir choma. It means that only in Eretz Yisrael is there a din of a cheftza of batei arichoma.
The difference between a cheftza in Eretz Yisrael and a cheftza in Chutz Laretz.
Correct. In Chutz Laretz it doesn't have the status of a cheftza of batei arichoma. Again, the reality is that you see its wall, but that wall does not engender a new status. But the chiddush, I think, of the Rav here, and I mean it's an amazing chiddush to defend Rashi, is that the entity of Batei Arichoma is something that exists on its own, irrelevant to the Kedushas Batei Arichoma. I can remove the Kedushas Batei Arichoma, and I'm still left with a legal status. Or correct. That's what the Rambam feels compelled to go out of his way to tell us, that it's not knowing in Chutz Laretz. So if a mitzora, if a person suffers from tzaras in Chutz Laretz, then he can consider it possibly Yisur Shalava. But if he suffers the din of Shiluach, says Rashi, in Eretz Yisrael, then he knows it's not Yisur Shalava, it's a kapara for his sin. Okay, that's one thing I wanted to share with you on the Gemara that we did and defend Rashi. Then we had the Gemara of various people who fell ill and were visited by Rav Yochanan. So for example, if you skip down from Holon V'Holohua, just a few lines, the Gemara tells us, it's parallel to Tosus Dibra Maschil Dina, that Rav Chiya Bar Abba Cholash, Rav Chiya Bar Abba became ill, and Rabbi Yochanan came to visit him. Rabbi Yochanan asked him, Chaviven Alecha Yisurim? Are you happy? Do you want to accept these Yisurim? Amalei. And Rabbi Chiya's response, which really surprises us, sort of knocks our socks off, Lo hein v'lo scharin, I don't want these Yisurim. Even though Lechora, we're talking about Yisurim Shal Ava. So yesterday we had a whole discussion in the Sefer Ein Ayah, we're not going to review it now, about the fact that Rabbi Chiya in this case, didn't want the experience of Yisur Shal Ava gratis, you know, something that's given from Hashem. He wanted to work very hard. And therefore he said, Lo hein v'lo scharin. I just want to add a few points to embellish this. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yochanan stretched out his arm, took Rabbi Chiya's hand into his arm, and okme, and he healed him. He stood him up from the bed. So one question I wanted to ask you, how do you understand Tainli es yodcha, give me your hand? You can interpret it literally, or is there something figurative or symbolic about it? So in truth, this seems to be a machlokes hamafarshim. And according to the Ein Yaakov and the Ben Yoyada, The Nesinas Hayad is symbolic. It's figurative. And this is all based on the Arizal. The Ari says that man's hand, his arm and his hand represent his heart. Somehow the heart and the way it beats is in his hand. And he says an amazing thing, that just like a physician can take your pulse, right, by holding your wrist, and he knows exactly what's happening in terms of the movement of the blood around your body, how the heart is doing well or Chas V'Shalom not doing well. He says that the Ari himself was able to take a man's hand into his hand, and he can determine the status of his heart, not physically, we're not talking about the physical biology of it, but he can tell him the status of his heart on a spiritual level. He says, "Kishem shel harofim osim liyodam achol v'chol yaguf, kach haya hari ochez yodo shel adam umodeid es peimos libo." And al yedei zeh hayodea mamat tzava shel osa adam v'chol yanefesh. So again, you and I might find this very strange and very far out, but I've heard so many stories about the Arizal that after a while you begin to believe them. And the Ari was able to tell about the nefesh of a person, his soul and the status thereof, by checking his hand. Everything is in the hand, because the hand represents the heart. V'zu haisa kavanoso shel Rabbi Yochanan b'omro havli yadcha. According to this interpretation of the Ein Yaakov and the Ben Yoyada, what Rabbi Yochanan was getting at is, let me check out your hand, let me check out your nefesh. The other approach is that Rabbi Yochanan wanted to send a subliminal message, hint at a message to Rabbi Chiya, and he told him that your hand should be open, liftos es atzmo bitztaka. Right, tztaka tatzil bimavis. He was telling him, open your hand and give tztaka. Why? Because tztaka has some sort of skula power to bring about a kapara, to bring about in this case, healing all of his and all of his ailments and all of his, terminating all of his suffering. So we see then that this concept of havli yodech, according to many, or yodach, I should say, according to many of the mefarshim, should be viewed as something symbolic. And then I wanted to add, Avi gave me the Sifsei Chachamim. The Sifsei Chachamim is interested in knowing what is lo hein v'lo scharon. What's that double language? And he says the following. That there are two ofanim of Yisurim al Adam. One is Yisurim al Boim lechaper avanosav, and the other is Yisurim shal Ava. And connected both of them, Rabbi Chiya responded, Lo hein velo scharon. Lo hein means, I'm not interested in this kapara, the power of Yisurim to bring kapara. Lo scharon refers to the schar of Olam Hazeh, of Olam Haba, in Yisurim shal Ava. That's the double language. But what the Sifsei Chachamim does not address is why Reb Chiya rejected these two. Why did he not want the Yisurim? And I think the answer is because it probably undermined his ability to function, to dedicate himself to Torah, to mitzvahs, to tefillah, and therefore he'd rather do without it. Again, yesterday we looked at the Ein Ayah and we discussed that in its own context.
Did we say that it was hindering your ability to serve Hashem, but it was learning or doing mitzvahs, that it was not...
Right, it's not Yisurim Shel Av, correct. So to the extent in which it was inhibiting his ability to maximize his tefillah and his Torah, it's not Yisurim Shel Av. So then my pshat won't fit with the Sifsei Chachamim, because Sifsei Chachamim is saying lo hein v'lo scharen, lo hein even, or lo scharen is even on what? On Yisurim Shel Ava. Okay, Rabosai. Now we continue on. Keep in mind that Rabbi Yochanan also fell ill. The Gemara asks why Rabbi Yochanan couldn't extricate himself from his own illness. And the Gemara employs the principle of Ein Chavush Matir Atzmo Nibes HaSuf. Fine.
Is that again?
Ein chovish matir atzmi beis hasurim, that a person who's incarcerated, he doesn't have the keys to free himself, even though he may have the ability to free someone else, but he can't free himself. Okay. Rabbi Lazar Cholish. Now we have another story. Again with Rabbi Yochanan. In this case, Rabbi Lazar got sick. Do you have it? It's, how do I tell you where to find it? It's parallel to Tosus Ella Amar. Do you have it? Rabbi Lazar Cholash, or some have Rabbi Eliezer Cholash. All the Gabe Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan goes to visit him. And what does he find? Chaza Davi Kogoni Bebeis Ovel. So the first thing he notices is that Rabbi Lazar's house, his abode, is completely dark. As if we would say in our terminology, Hafsakat Chashmal. It's pure dark. So what does Rabbi Yochanan do? And again, we have to figure out whether we take this Gemara literally or figuratively. Is Galye Lidroi V'Nofal Nahora. Rabbi Yochanan exposes his arm, and lo and behold, the house is full of light. In other words, the skin of Rabbi Yochanan was so mavhik, as we say, glowing, that he was able, from that, the beauty of his skin, to light up the entire house. Rashi says, V'nofal nahora, shahaya besoro mavhik. And why Rabbi Yochanan? Because she yafa haya me'od. The Gemara tells us about Metzia that Rabbi Yochanan was the, shall we say, the epitome of beauty. He personified beauty. And the Gemara tells us strange things that, which I can't explain right now, because I don't know if I understand them, that he used to position himself outside the mikveh, and the women would give birth to children that were as beautiful as Rabbi Yochanan. But in any event, the bottom line is Rabbi Yochanan is the personification of Yofi, and that's the main point of this whole Gemara that we're learning. What is the Yofi of Rabbi Yochanan? What's it about? But in any event, his skin was so beautiful that he was able to light up the whole room. Okay. Now here, the Ben Yehoyada is quoted as saying that he doesn't understand. How could it possibly be that Rabbi Yochanan could light up the whole room? He says, even if you have a pearl or a precious stone, which is very refined, nevertheless, it doesn't give light, it can only reflect light. So that if Rabbi Yochanan went into Rabbi Lazar and he was in an absolutely dark room and there was no source of light whatsoever, then the arm of Rabbi Yochanan could not possibly have generated light.
Isn't that a kasha to Maisa?
No, it's a kasha to force us to reinterpret the Maisa, if you follow what I mean. Because as I asked you before, Shalom, should we take this Gemara literally? Yeah. Or should we take it figuratively? So the Ben Yehoyada, he was a Gadol B'Yisrael in Baghdad, right? He says you have to interpret this Gemara figuratively.
Right, not the spirits.
Okay, that could be. But he says, the Ben Yehoyada, that it means Ar Ruchani. Maybe you're right, maybe it peps him up. But whatever it is, you don't take this Gemara literally. However, not everyone agrees with the Ben Yehoyada, and the Iye Hayam is so impressed by the kasha of the Ben Yehoyada that he says that the room was not totally dark. There was a little bit of light that came through, and that little of light, even though it was basically a dark room, hit up against Rabbi Yochanan's Zroa, and Rabbi Yochanan's Zroa was able to reflect this light until there was light and around the house. So again, just to mention, as we go along through the sugya, was it literally or was it figuratively? That's two approaches in the Mefarshim. Chazya, now all of a sudden, I don't know why he couldn't hear this before, but all of a sudden he sees the Havakabachi Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar's crying, he's weeping. Why is he weeping? So that's what Rabbi Yochanan is curious about. Amaleya my kabachis. Now, I'm going to introduce the punchline to the sugya up front. And the Mefarshim say that Rabbi Lazar, in the mindset of Rabbi Yochanan, was crying about his own spiritual deficiencies, his own sins. He was not living up to his capacity. You remember the famous story, Zusha, why weren't you Zusha? In this case, Rabbi Lazar, why weren't you Rabbi Lazar? That's what's bringing Rabbi Lazar to cry, probably in this very serious state in which he's contemplating the end of life, says Rabbi Yochanan, you know what? There's no reason for you to cry. Why not? Imishum Torah. Now notice that Rabbi Yochanan is going to offer three possible reasons, or three areas in which you could entertain the possibility that Rabbi Elazar was deficient, and he's going to disprove or counter argue against each one of the three. The first one is Torah, the study of Torah. Imishum Torah delo apesht. That's a difficult Aramaic word. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Imishum Torah shalola madata harbe kirtzoncha." So apesht seems to be to multiply. In other words, to increase, shall we say, the volume of Torah. If your Torah study did not reach its capacity, so he says, don't get upset about that. And he's going to quote a Gemara, a very serious Gemara in Menasechta Menachas, to disprove that theory that you should be crying, Rebbe Elazar, over your lack of Torah study. But Rashi adds a very important word. Rashi says, kirtzoncha. And what this means is that Rabbi Yochanan didn't even raise the possibility that Rabbi Elazar was not maximizing his Torah. What the possibility that crossed Rabbi Yochanan's mind, and Rabbi Yochanan wants to battle against it, is that perhaps lo lamadta Torah harbe kefi ritzoncha, meaning you had high expectations. You know, your horizons and your dreams and your thoughts about how much you could achieve in your Torah study were too great. They were so great that you are depressed about the fact that you didn't achieve that level. Rashi, therefore, by adding the word ritzoncha, kirtzoncha, is conveying a very important message here. And why and how does Rabbi Yochanan reject this? He says, based on a Gemara in Menachos, Echad ha-marbe v'echad ha-mamit u'bilvad she'echavein libo la'shamay. Says Rashi, What is it about Menachos, which is the Masech Tekonshim, if you will, that makes it relevant to this principle? And he says the following. This is the Gemara Menachos. There's something called an Olas Behema, and there's something called a Minchas Solas. The Behema comes from a very expensive animal. You know, go buy an animal for a carbon. I always think that, you know, when the Migdash Mirtshem will be rebuilt, people are going to spend who knows how much money buying animals for korbanos. But the Torah describes the Ola as Reach Nichoach, which means that it pleases the Ribonish of the Eibishter. In Karban Mincha, which is a cheap karban, which is really designated for someone who can't afford a more expensive karban, because in korbanos we always try to bring the best, it also says the same two words, Reach Nichoach, and the Gemara says that this teaches us that no matter how much, you know, some people have the ability to maximize, they can spend more money. Other people could spend less money, but they're also achieving their maximum. And insofar as they have the kavana l'shem shamayim, they tried to do whatever they could, and therefore God considers both karbanos, whether it's the ola coming from a behemo, whether it's the mincha coming from soles, chaviv l'shem ha'makom, it has the same chavivus in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam. God is not impressed by, you know, the bottom line on your check and how much you spent. He's impressed by the kavana l'shem shamayim. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan consoles Rabbi Elazar, there's no reason why you should be depressed about it, because you learned a maximum amount of Torah based on your ability, you had the right kavanos, and you did the best you could. So this is the way Rashi interprets the sugya. However, the Avas Eson, which is one of the commentaries in the Ein Yaakov, is not happy with Rashi's pshat. And the reason for that is that he believes that Rabbi Elazar was still a young man, or he certainly wasn't an old man at this time, and therefore, why would there be a havamina that he didn't maximize his Torah study? He still has plenty of time to study Torah. And therefore he offers an alternative pshat. And that is, based on the Gemara in Chagiga, the Gemara tells us a story in Chagiga that Rabbi Yochanan offered a chavrusa with Rabbi Lazar to learn Maisa Merkava, the secrets of the Torah. And what happened? So Rabbi Lazar refused. He didn't want to take advantage of that glorious opportunity. Could you imagine, Rabbi Osai, if the Rashka Bahag offers you a chavrusa and Maisa Merkava? You know, we're going to probably wake up at 2 a.m. in the morning and, you know, study the secrets of the Torah, and you refuse? And Rabbi Lazar, by refusing, carried within him a certain guilt trip. And the way that the Avas Eson interprets our Gemara, when it says, Ibishum Torah Delo Ipasht, or apeshed, he meant to say that he didn't learn the maximum of Torah. He didn't dedicate any of his time and his energy to study that area of Torah study, which is called Maisa Merkava.
There's a risk in learning Maisa Merkava.
Oh, beautiful, David. He says the Avos Eson, that's why Rabbi Yochanan was consoled, Rabbi Lossa. He said, even though I offered you such a chavrusa, I can't gauge where you're up to. You know, there's something called a zaken. Zaken doesn't necessarily mean how old you are, although there are traditions that you shouldn't study Maisa Merkava before a certain age. But basically, a zaken means someone who's oriented enough to understand Maisa Merkava, put it into his perspective. If you, Rabbi Lazar, decided that you weren't ready for it, you weren't a zaken kol tzarkecha, so that was your decision. You had the kavana l'shem shamayim, and therefore there's nothing for you to be worried about. This part of the sugya is the easy part of the sugya. Now it gets really rough. He says the following: the imi shum mizone, and if you're crying, says Rashi, she'encha ashir. Now this is wild. I mean, why would Rabbi Yochanan accuse Rabbi Lazar of crying because he's not a rich guy? You know, all of us, I guess, want to be rich, you know, amongst the dreams that we have. Personally, I'm not sure about it. I sometimes vacillate. I'm not sure if I want to be rich. I don't know if it's being rich is always a great thing. I'd like to cover my bills, but I don't know if I want to be rich. But to say that, I mean, it's almost an accusation here, according to Rashi. Rabbi Lazar is being accused by Rabbi Yochanan of being depressed because he's not wealthy. Maybe he invested in stocks and bonds and there was a crash. I don't know. So therefore he would get depressed. I mean, that's more appropriate for a lower person. So the Mefarshim explained the following. That what Rabbi Lazar was saying is... I'm sorry, what Rabbi Yochanan was saying to Rabbi Lazar is, maybe you're down in the dumps because you're poor. Again, we have to see how to fit that into Rashi, because Rashi doesn't say you're poor. Rashi says, because ein cha'ashir. But be that as it may, the Mefarshim want to say that the hint, the intimation here, he didn't say it explicitly, of Rabbi Yochanan was that you're crying because of poverty. And in fact, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Lazar was very, very poor. This is the Gemara in Tainis on Daf Chaf Hey. The Gemara says, "Hoisa shah dechuka lo biyose." That's the Gemara's language in Tainis, which means that he was suffered from abject poverty. He was really destitute. He didn't have a nickel to his name. So, what was the fear of Rabbi Lazar about his poverty? Why was he breaking down, crying? The answer is because he felt that to suffer such poverty must have been a result of his sins and his deficiencies. Mitoch ribui avanosa. So what does Rabbi, and then we have to come back to Rashi. So what does Rabbi Yochanan say to him? Imi shum mizone, because you don't have food for the table. You know, you're eating hard bread. He says the following: Lo kol adam zochel shtei shulchanos. In Yiddish, we have a phrase. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Toru gdula b'makom echad. That's the way the Chassidim say that some of the Chassidish Rebbes were very wealthy. And some of the Chassidim were very wealthy. So you think that a wealthy person is, you know, he's so dedicated to his you know, to accruing wealth, he doesn't have time for Torah, for Yerushalayim, for Avodah. And the answer is no. There's such a thing called Torah Gdula B'Makom Echad. Gdula means wealth. And occasionally, again, it's kind of rare, you meet very wealthy people who are totally dedicated to their Torah studies. I mean, I can think of in my life maybe two or three people that fit that bill. Very rare. It's usually one or the other. It's either Torah or Gedulah. But to integrate both, and when I say Gedulah, I'm talking about, you know, I'm not talking about someone who has 100,000 pounds in the bank. I'm talking about who has millions of pounds in the bank. And Torah. So that's very rare. So that's the phrase here of Lo kol adam zocha l'shtei shulchanos. The problem with this pshat is that if that be the case, then apparently Rabbi Elazar was depressed because he didn't have ashirus. He didn't have wealth. And the way we interpreted it earlier, that would have been a very strong, maybe even a false accusation that Rabbi Elazar would be depressed and he would be breaking down and crying because he wasn't wealthy. So what then can we salvage here from this Gemara of Lo kol adam zocha l'shtei shulchanos? And here I want to share with you something from the Emes LeYaakov. The Emes LeYaakov, the original Emes LeYaakov, was the Nesivus. You heard of him? If you go to yeshivas, you always hear about the Ketzos and the Nesivus. You know, they were always at loggerheads. His name was Rav Yaakov Milisa. He came from a city in Poland called Lisa. He wrote many, many books. One of which is called the Emes LeYaakov, and it's a commentary on the Agadita. And just recently we got a hold of it, so as soon as the photocopy machine's working, you can bet your bottom dollar you'll be getting copies of the Emes LeYaakov. And he says the following. What does it mean, Ein Adam Zocha L'Shtei Shulchanos? He says the following. There's something called mazel. Now we have to understand what mazel means. Meaning, when a person is born, everything except for one most important thing in life, is kind of like predetermined. That's called mazel. What does it mean? How rich a person is going to be in his life, you know, even though a person, you know, goes to all ends of the world to try to make investments and accrue wealth, but really it's all, in a sense, predetermined. It's mazel. It's not biyodcha. You really don't have any control of it. Hakol bidei shamayim. The only area, but again, it's pretty, is yiras shamayim. That's what's left to you. In other words, every person is given what he needs in this world to rise up to the, you know, to stand up at the plate and try to maximize his potential in yiras shamayim. Some people are given wealth, and they have their challenges in terms of yiras shamayim. It's not so simple. But maybe they have a certain advantage because they don't have to worry where the next meal is coming from. Other people are born to be destitute. And maybe their challenges in Yiras Shamayim are that much greater. But whatever it is, you are brought down, a neshama comes down into the guf, and Hashem says, here's your shlichus. I'm going to provide you with the following things, which are physical in nature, and now take the ball and run with it. You have the challenge. That's called mazel. The mazel is not biyodcha. Meaning, Reb Elazar says, Reb Yochanan, don't attribute your poverty to your lacking, your deficiency in mitzvahs, to your averus. No! This is your mazel. This is what you were granted. And I just want to add, and I've said it many times, so it's probably coming out of your ears, that one of the brachas that we recite daily is Sha'asa Li Kol Tzarki, which Chazal say refers to the shoes. Okay? So there's a famous story about the Rebbe, I told it to you a million times, but I love the story, that the Talmidim were, the Hasidim were complaining about poverty and this and that, so the Rebbe sent them to Reb Zusha. He says, there you'll see poverty. So they came to Reb Zusha, and they noticed that Reb Zusha didn't have shoes on. Instead of shoes, he had bags over his feet. So they said to Reb Zusha, how do you recite the bracha Shasali Kol Tzarki? He says, Nay, you don't understand what the pshat is. Shasali Kol Tzarki. When Chazal say Shasali Kol Tzarki, refers to the shoes, what they mean is the following. Let's say you have two options. You can buy a new suit, and it'll cost you $600. Or you can buy a used suit, and it'll cost you $100. The only problem is that the used suit doesn't fit you. So what do? You take the cheap suit for $100, that's a fraction of the price, you bring it to a tailor, and he fixes the suit. He charges you 50 or 100. He spends sach kol 200. You save yourself 400. It's a good deal. You can't do that with shoes. Shoes have to fit. He says, when we say the brach every day of Shasli Kol Tzarki, what we're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you gave me the exact fit. What I need to face the challenges of this world, you provided me. For some people it might be Ashiras. For other people it might be the opposite. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan was conveying when he said, Lo kol adam zocha l'shtei shulchanos. It's a fantastic pshat. And I think it's very true that we have to attribute certain things to mazel. These are the elements that we've been, that God bestowed upon us to face the challenges. But it's sha'asali kol tzarki. Whatever we need, in every situation, God doesn't test us beyond our capacity. We can live up and stand up to the plate. Correct. That's Yerushalmai. Yerushalmai means Shasali Kol Tzarki. He gave me whatever I need. And don't blame yourself. Don't beat your breast because you are poor. That's what God gave you. That's mazel. Yeah, Michael.
Two shulchanos, in that sense, just means you got plenty of food, you got enough to fill two tables. Is that what it means?
No, two shulchanos means one shulchan for this world and one shulchan for the next.
Uh-huh.
Mean one shulchan of physicality, of possessions and wealth, and the other shulchan is spirituality, is Torah study, and so forth and so on.
Two blessings.
So there are rare people, but it's local Adam. By the way, there was another girsa, Ein Adam. Tosis rejects that. If you take a look at Tosis, the master local Adam, he says, Ein Ligros, Ein Adam Zochel L'shtei Shulchanos, which means that no one can do such a thing. Tosis says, Hakamet Tzadikim Zochel L'shtei Shulchanos. We find this phenomenon of Torah Gdula B'makom Echad, correct? Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the Gemara says, was very wealthy. And what person was more dedicated to Torah study than Rabbi? So you have to change the girsa, and we already have the correct girsa. Lokal Adam. Not that there's no such thing, but not everyone is Zocha. Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you different challenges, and it always fits your needs. Let's get back to Rashi. Rashi says, "Im mishum mizoni she'encha ashir." Now, according to all the commentaries, and we saw this based on the Gemara in Tainus that describes Rabbi Lozer as Shad Chuka, he was very, very poor. Rashi should have said, Sha'ata Ani. Why does Rashi, in a certain sense, deliberately avoid those words, as if they're dirty words, so to speak? He doesn't want to say, Sha'ata Ani.
Maybe because it's something to do with maybe he felt that you didn't think you had enough. You didn't think yourself wealthy, though you have X, you wanted Y.
Okay, but that itself is an accusation.
Right.
So I just want to share with you one thing I saw here. Again, it's a Sifsei Chacham over and over again. He says that Rashi was deliberately avoiding the words Sha'ata Ani. Why? He says because of a pasuk in Tehillim. What does it say in the pasuk in Tehillim? Lo ra'isi tzadik nezav v'zara mevakesh lochem. In other words, a tzadik is never called an ani. So to say the words ani, Rashi says that Reb Lazar was being, so to speak, described, was being described by Reb Yochanan as an ani, is that would be a violation of the rule that a tzadik is not an ani.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Even though the word ani in that pasuk doesn't really refer to aniyus,
right.
There are tzaddikim who are never aniyim, but that, you know, we don't want to call them an ani because the word ani has such connotations that we don't want to use it. Okay. Now in number three, what's number three? Imishum b'nei, which means you're crying because of children that died. And here you get the impression that Rabbi Lozer died without children. And the Mefarshim got a town on this because it seems from a Gemara Masechta Nida that Rabbi Lozer had a child by the name of Pedas, who's named after Zeda, his grandfather. Rabbi Lozer's father's name was Pedas. So they answer various answers. It could be that Pedas wasn't born yet at this moment in time. It could be that Rabbi Lozer had other children that died. Rabbi Pedas was the only one that survived. Or it could possibly be that Rabbi Pedas had passed away after this whole story, but it was still during the lifetime of Rebbe Lazar. Various answers to try to reconcile the fact that this Rebbe Lazar was a father of a child.
He could have died before the visit of Rebbe Yochanan.
Correct. That was one of the possible answers. He wasn't born yet, or it could be he still was alive at that time, but he died later. Whatever it might be, the bottom line is that Rebbe Lazar apparently buried a number of children. We don't know how many.
Can I just say something? You said there was a different Gersa, Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Elazar, right?
Yeah, I have Rabbi Elazar. What do you have?
Well, in the Hebrew text, it's with a Yud.
Yeah.
In the English, well, not the English, but the commentary. I have the same book you do. Right. It's without the Yud.
Okay. So again, as I say,
at the same time.
Yeah, they were both contemporaries of Rabbi Yochanan. So we don't know if it's Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar.
Okay, also, so we have in our Mishnah, it's not that it here it's with...
Oh, that's somebody else. That's a Tana. Yeah, that's not... In any event, Rabbi Osai, what I wanted to point out to you is the punchline of this whole sugya. And that is, Dein Garma Dasira Bir. He shows him whatever it was. Remember, we discussed this at great length, whether it was a tooth, whether it's this, that, the other thing. But it means he conveyed to him the message that I, Rabbi Yochanan, had buried 10 children. Says the Marsha that Rabbi Yochanan has a threefold argument here. Notice he's rejecting three possibilities. And they are Torah, Anius, and Bonin. And these three form, if you will, a triangle. The Gemara in Masechta Moed Katan, says the Marsha, speaks about three blessings in life. Chaye, Bone, Umezone. And the Marsha says an unbelievable chiddush. He says that the word Chaye in the Gemara in Mezone is a reference to Torah. Torah, Kihem Chayenu, is considered Chaye Adam. So there are three things that are supreme in our life. And the Gemara says about these three, lo bizchusa talya milsa, ela b'mazola talya milsa. The success in these three areas depends upon mazol, not upon zchus. Torah depends upon mazol. How much Torah, again, the potential for Torah that you have. It's not predestined, but there's a certain limitation that everyone has in terms of how much Torah you can study. That doesn't mean we have to be laid back and give excuses. But it means that you need mazel. You remember the famous Gemara, HaKol Toli B'mazel Afilu Sefer Torah Shemehechal? The Marsha doesn't quote that Gemara, but I think it's appropriate. It means that even the Torah study, you have so many cases of Talmidei Chachamim. For example, my father knew in his youth a man... His name was Palachek. Did you ever hear about him? He was known as the Ilui. He came from a town called Machist. And he was known as the Machister Ilui. At the age of 15, he was learning by Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim said about the Machister Ilui that his depth begins where mine ends. That's how much of a god he is. You ask any yeshiva bacha, tap him on the shoulders and ask him who was the Machister Ilui. If you're lucky, he'll know, which again, probably 1 in 100,000 yeshiva will know that there's a street here in Kiryat Moshe, which is called Rechov HaIlui, which is named after the Machister Ilui. My father said his genius was unbelievable. He used to say things in class, parenthetical inserts, and the Talmidim would spend hours racking their brains to figure out how he came up with it and try to understand what he said. He was a genius of geniuses. Reb Chaim used to say about him that from the Machister Ilui you could make two Einsteins. That's how bright he was. Who heard of him? Who knows about him? The Tzionim know about him because he was a great Tzioni, and that's why they named the street after him. He loved Eretz Yisrael. All he thought about in his life was Eretz Yisrael. He died at the age of 52 from a tooth. They didn't have penicillin. And it affected his whole body. He was 52 years old. Nobody ever heard of him.
When did he die?
I think in 1935 or so. But where was this great genius? Probably the brightest student Reb Chaim Brisker ever had. And nobody ever heard of him. You know what happened? He had thousands, tens of thousands of pages of writing in manuscript. And during World War I, when he was running away from the Milchama, they all got lost. He was the happiest man, my father said, until somebody mentioned his ksavim. If somebody would say that word, he would break down crying. Because his life's work was completely lost. So what they have is, there's something called Chidush Ha'ili Mimeches, I have a copy of it. It's basically his son-in-law tried to reconstruct some of his father-in-law's Chidush. And nobody looks at that safe, because it's not written, again, I don't want to say this publicly, but it's not written properly. It's not clear. The clearest thing about that book is the picture of the Mimeches Ha'ili at the front cover. It's a beautiful photograph. I love it. Get an idea of what he looked like. But he was a Rebbe of Rebbe Yitzchak Elkanan Yeshiva. He died, as I told you, young man. So, Hakol Toli B'Mazel. Even Torah, to some extent, is dependent upon Mazel. But that doesn't mean you have to beat your breast and cry about it. Omar Lei. And here's the punchline. Rabbi Loza says, I have a surprise for you. I'm adding that, just to dramatize it. I'm not crying, not about Torah, not about Mazoni, not about Bunny. I'm crying about you, Rabbi Yochanan. Hi Shufra Deboli Biafra Kobachina. I'm thinking of your body decomposing in the grave. Shufra, meaning that beautiful body of Rabbi Yochanan, just rotting away, meaning the end of all flesh, applies to you, Rabbi Yochanan, just as applies to me. Maybe I'm not such a good looking guy, but you're a pretty good looking guy. And the Mefarshim here go to town. This is, after all, the punchline of the whole sugya. And Rabbi Yochanan turns back to me, says, Amar Le, you know what? Al da vade kabachis. If you're crying about my beauty going down into the grave, that really deserves bechia. Nothing else could justify your bechia. Is ubachi travayu. And the two of them cried and cried and cried. And then the Gemara finishes up the story with the same scenario, the same tasrit that we've seen over and over again. Ad hachi v'hachi, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan turns to him, Chavivin olecha yisurin, Amalei lohen, lo scharin, Amalei hav li yodcha, yoev le yodei v'ukme. He heals. So the question is again, very obvious. Who cares about the fact that Rabbi Yochanan is such a handsome guy and he's going to be buried? And the Mefarshim is so hard pressed by this sugya, how two Amoraim could be crying about death in terms of the physical decomposition of the body, that they reinterpret this sugya. Minakotz elakotz. The Marsha says that this is all figurative and it's all a reference to what? To Churban Abayis, Churban of Yerushalayim. The Gemara says in Bab Mitzia, Rabbi Yochanan says, Ani ishtayar mishfira Yerushalayim. The beauty of Rabbi Yochanan was a vestige of the descendants of Yerushalayim. He was the last one from a mishpacha of the beautiful people that of Yerushalayim. And the Yofi here is just a code word for Yerushalayim. As long as Rabbi Yochanan was alive, there was a connection to Yerushalayim. With Rabbi Yochanan's death, there was a complete severance of the umbilical cord that connects us to Yerushalayim. He quotes the Gaon. The Gaon says that when Rabbi Elazar beheld the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan, he remembered the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of Tzaddikim. Probably he refers to the Asar Rugei Malchus. Everything here in this Gemara is a remez to Churban Beis HaMikdash. But in the last 2 minutes of our discussion, I'd like you to take a look at the page that I gave you from the Ein Ayah. This is page 18. And he says the following. It's number Lamed Zayin on the left side towards the bottom of page 18. He says, Ki haguf berov b'nei adam yesh bo achirus v'ra elasha nefesh meromemes u'mishamrasa u'mishamrasa. He says, if you isolate the biological element of man, it is, you know, and you separate it from its spirit, then the physical body is full of achirus. It's kind of, shall we say, a little bit repulsive, a little bit disgusting. You know, all sorts of things come out of the body and all sorts of things go into the body. He says, therefore, insofar as we look and we view the goof as a separate entity, who cares about the fact that it will be decomposed? On the contrary, the decomposition of the body is a tikkun, is connecting the body to higher worlds. He gives the mashal of hituch kesef betoch kur. You take silver as a natural in its natural state. It's a very expensive, precious mineral. You put it into a refining kur. You heat it up, and you remove its impurities. That's what happens during decomposition. You know, it's kuras hames when we bury the dead. We're really, in a sense, planting a seed for the future. But Rabbi Yochanan had a different kind of a beauty. His beauty was a physical, let's say, a manifestation, an external manifestation of an Ar Eloki, of some sort of divine light. And that divine light surrounded his body, and his body actually radiated with this light. I'm reminded of a few things here, Rabbos. I'm reminded, first of all, of the fact that we, according to many Mefarshim, we understood that when Rabbi Yochanan exposed his Zroah and the dark room of Rabbi Chiya all of a sudden lit up, that that's a figurative understanding of the Ar Eloki, of a divine light. I'm also reminded of what Chazal speak about, you know, in terms of Karan Ar Panav Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu radiated this spiritual, supernal light. And all this is because Rabbi Yochanan took his guf, which in its original natural biological state is full of achirus. It's not something that's pure. And he was able to be mezakech it, to uplift it, to get to the point in which his guf was no longer any sort of a barrier or a mechitza to wedge between his spirit and his physicality. He converted, he transformed his physical guf into something that's, he calls it sikhlit, as opposed to chamrit, meaning it's purely spiritual. And therefore, bachu al hay shufra deboliat biafra, perhaps we could say that this connects, he says, to the chavivin alecha yisurin. The purpose of yisurin is to transform the guf into something spiritual. However, even so, they refused to accept these Yisurin. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan was able to heal them. Why? You might ask the question, why not accept Yisurin, which will elevate the goof? But the answer is, that's not something that they wanted gratis to come down from heaven. Lo hein v'lo schara. Hayurotzim l'taken hakol. They wanted to elevate their bodies al yidei avodosam habchirit, through their freedom of choice, through that energetic toil and sweat. They didn't want Shamayim, the heavens, to interfere, to intercede, and give them the gift of Yisurim. They wanted to maximize their potential on their own, with their own kochos. But Rabosa, I think Rav Kook is adding a beautiful element here to our discussion about why they were crying over the loss of the body. Again, the body is physical, and on the contrary, decomposition posthumously is something good. Why were they crying? Because in the case of Rabbi Yochanan, who had succeeded to reach that sublime level of R, of Tikkun, with his goof, to lose that Rabbi Yochanan and bury that in the ground, that's something really, really depressing. And they both broke down in tears. Exactly. Rabbi Yochanan understood his worth, and Rabbi Elazar understood his worth.
By the way, they say that Yochanan was a very handsome man, but when he got old, he was very heavy and very big.
Really? That I don't remember. Yeah? If you could find that for me, I'd love to research that. Okay, Rabbi Elazar, we'll take a break now, and in about 5 minutes, we'll study Chumash. Again, I have a beautiful mimer that I wanted to study with you. I don't have a photocopy machine, so I don't know what to do. I'm caught in the bottom. But I think what we'll do is, we'll have a little bit of Torah Shemal Peh, if that's okay with you.